Hello, and welcome back to the 90 Day Fiancé Rehab Up podcast, where every week we get together and we talk about the hot mess express that is the 90 Day Fiancé franchise. I am your host and conductor, Puyazan Vakili, and I'm very excited to talk about this week. This is a very interesting week in 90 Day Fiancé entertainment, should we say. There's a new show out there in Stacey and Darcy. I have not watched it, but we're going to talk about The Other Way, and we're going to talk about Happily Ever After, of course. And I would not be able to do this on my own. I got to have a squad here representing. And first and foremost, I want to introduce you to a new member of the RHAP Class of 2020. We've got Sasha with us. Sasha, how are you doing today?
Hi, everyone. I'm good. I'm excited to be here. You know, playoffs have started where we're happy.
It's a good time. We got sports bubbles. We've got our reality TV back in full force. It's a good time to be a viewer of all things media.
Yes, indeed.
And the other person with me, you may have heard him here and there. You may have heard him talking Big Brother. I'm, of course, talking about Bobby Goodsby. Bobby, how are you doing today?
Hey, Puya. So, you know what? I really hope the cops show up because you stole my podcast heart. I just want you to know that.
If that wasn't the cheesiest thing we're going to talk about today, there are other stuff coming up. But no one's showing up. Hearts are stolen, but I'll return it if you want. It's all good, man. It's all good. But yeah, I'm very excited. So what we're going to do here today, so we're going to switch it up. So today we're going to talk about The Other Way first, and then we're going to talk about Happily Ever After. And this is because Sasha's here with us to talk about The Other Way. And then she's not fully caught up with Happily Ever After. And dare I say, no one can blame her. It's very hard to keep up with Happily Ever After. So it's all good. But before we proceed any further, Sasha, tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us how you've come to be a fan of 90 Day Fiancé. Tell us about that journey.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be here. Seriously, I'm excited to leave Dysfunction Junction on this hot mess express. Mm-hmm. But I am from the Bay Area and I currently work for a nonprofit and I'm really just into reality TV. And I studied people. Actually, I have a degree in human relations. So I love like analyzing people and really like breaking down what they do and why they do it. So reality TV is obviously the best medium for the superpower. And 90 Day Fiancé in general, I mean, what do you not like about it, right? Like people meet, you have 90 days to get it together and get married, be together. Here we are. And I think 90 Day Fiancé, The Other Way, it's so fascinating to me because as an immigrant myself, it's fascinating to hear about people leaving America where I believe, you know, everything you want is amazing. Maybe not everything you need, but everything you want is amazing. And, you know, it's a move to another country where life is a little bit harder for a lot of people. So I love watching this and I love seeing these people expose themselves. That's why I'm into 90 Day.
Lovely. And I think a lot of the reasons you've got into the show are very similar to why I ended up getting into the show. But to my surprise, Bobby, mm-hmm. I did not know you were a 90 Day fan. And then you told me you were. So I'm intrigued to hear your story about it, too. How did you come across 90 Day Fiancé?
Yeah, so basically I had heard here and there mainly from the podcast, from hearing Liana talk about it, hearing you talk about it, about 90 Day Fiancé. And I had never really sat down and watched it. And then during quarantine, my girlfriend just was so bored. She decided to give it a shot and she turned it on. And then I was like, you know what? I'll check this out. I've been hearing good things about it. I'll see what it's all about. And my first experience was before the 90 days. And Oh my God, what an amazing season to really fall in love with the show. So that picked me up. That threw me into this whirlwind. And now I'm starting to rewatch old seasons. And now here we are with these two great seasons. Well, at least one great season.
That's right. Yeah. And I think, honestly, before the 90 days, not the last season with Big Neck Ed, but mm-hmm. It was the one before that with Darcy. That was the first season I watched. So I think if anyone wants to get into this, I would probably recommend them to watch Before the 90 Days if I'm bringing someone new over, because it's the easiest one to consume and they've all been relatively fun. So
yeah,
I think you found a good avenue to start in.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very happy with it. I'm just hoping that it can continue.
Yeah. No, I'm sure it will. So what we're going to do here, as is with every episode, we're going to talk through couple by couple, and we're first going to talk about The Other Way, episode 12. So, Sasha, please go ahead and make your pick. Which couple do you want us to talk about first? You can pick any of them.
All right. You know, I think I have to stay loyal to the soil, so I have to pick Sumit and Jenny first.
Okay.
We get them for, you know, a quick hot minute, but, I have to. I have to start with them.
All right, go for it. So how do you like this couple first is my first question. And then fill us in on what's been going on with them this episode.
Yeah, so I am so with Sumit and Jenny. And what I mean by that is he's obviously lying through his teeth, but I live for Jenny's optimism. You know, like that's the optimism I need to have in my life, because she is ride or die for this man. Like, it literally does not matter what he does.
Yeah.
So that's why I just live for this couple. And obviously, I'm Indian, so it's really exciting that we get a little bit more representation on our screen. So that's why I really got into this. And I'm rooting for them. I follow them on Instagram a little bit. So, I keep up with them. And they're the reason why I got into season one. So I'm so thankful that they're back for season two. And we see them today or in this episode. Their intro song, I really want to give a quick shout out. It's an actual Bollywood song.
Oh, so snap.
TLC actually, paid some money, I'm assuming. So I already got hyped because I was like, yes, I know this song. It was played at my wedding. Like, I'm ready. And we meet them. And I'm literally watching my faves paint the wall. Like, why do they do this to me? But use a little TLC money maybe to hire a painter. I don't know. But they're painting an accent wall, and they're starting to talk about Sumit's parents. And Sumit's parents allegedly have finally wanting to talk to him. And Jenny is excited. But then I think it digests. And she's like, wait. They're coming to here in this house. And Sumit says no. He thinks he's going to go to his house and talk to them a little, try to smooth things over. So I'm thinking that Jenny is going to be stressed out. But we get a confessional from Jenny saying she actually has PTSD from the last time they even talked and met. And, you can see her visibly getting upset already, and she doesn't want to talk to them. So she's happy that they're going and going to go talk to them without her. The only issue is that she believes and is afraid that he's going to get held hostage again. So that's really where we are with them. And Sumit is trying to figure this out and balance it.
Yeah, I have a lot of concerns. So just with the couple in general, I think you put it best that her optimism is insane on insane levels. The fact that she even came back to India after the last time is insane to me. But hey, we want to root for a couple. I feel like they're an easy second couple to root for in this season after Kenny and Armando, potentially, just on lovability factor. However, I think that first of all, let's talk about the biggest mistake of them all. I think the choice of paint was horrendous. I think that they picked the wrong color for this wall. And Bobby, would you be willing to mix paint with your bare hands? Yes or no?
I mean, I would try the stick as well first, but that would probably not work out too well like it did for them. So no, I think that I would leave that up to something else in my house that I'd be willing to let go rather than put my hand into that paint. But hey, good on them. They've got like a pink wall now, essentially, was what that came out to. So, hey, if they're happy, then I'm happy for them.
So the other question I have, Bobby. So earlier in the season, Sumit when talking about going to the divorce lawyer and like getting the documents, he was like, oh, we have to see when we can do it. It was a little bit like cagey. The answer wasn't really there. I felt somewhat similarly here where he's like, oh, I need to see when they're available, when they're free, which to me made it sound like a bigger deal than it is. Just call them up and you figure it out. So do you think he's delaying the process? Do you think he's got cold feet? Do you think what he's saying is real? Like, what are your thoughts on Sumit and how he operates?
Yeah, I absolutely think he's got the cold feet. I think that he's really, you know, digging his heels into this and trying to, you know, delay it as much as possible. There's just something that doesn't feel right about this situation. And I don't blame Jenny for being nervous that, you know, it's so weird to still hear her say like, oh, what if they tried to kidnap him or something? Like, you know, like, it's just a weird thing to process a grown man being taken by his parents and not let out of the house. But, you know, that's the situation there, and that's something they might have to deal with. So I think he is digging his heels in the ground with this situation. I just don't know. We don't really know the truth. We don't know what the truth is. And I feel for Jimmy because it's such a nerve-wracking situation to be in.
And I think Sasha, and you can tell me if you are with me or not on this, but as someone who comes from an Asian background, comes from, you know, the Middle East, I've very much have seen this with specific families and the way they follow their culture, their tradition, where the parents absolutely have the last word. They're the director. They have director's cut. They have final say on what happens. So I can see him just delaying the inevitable here, because I do worry that if they say no, he's not going to be able to do anything about it outside of whatever legalities there are. I don't think he would be okay just disregarding his family and doing something they don't want him to do. So I think he's very nervous about that.
Yeah, a few things. So first, the divorce, like, I refuse to believe that it's going to take so long. Like,
right.
I have family that got divorced in India, and it did not take this long, y'all. Unless it wasn't this allegedly is a non-contested divorce, right? Or uncontested.
Right.
So there shouldn't be a problem. So that's problem number one. And then secondly, I agree. I believe that he's grown up with his parents. He seems to be living with them, right, in a joint family for so long until Jenny showed up. So I think it's that he's grown up with this mentality of like my parents having the final say, because I don't believe that his parents legally can necessarily stop this marriage. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that like the society in Hindi, the saying is lo kya kahenge, which literally translates to what will people say. And that is exactly this issue and this relationship's problem is that, you know, what will people say? Like, she's, you know, Jenny's older than Sumit's mom. So I think that it's this societal pressure that's keeping him tied to her. And, you know, my mom said it best, like, if you can't, you know, stand up for your love, like, why are you falling in love? And that's my question to Sumit. Like, you know, you knew your family, you knew how they are, you know how India is, and you know how New Delhi is, pretty conservative place. So how, like, why are you putting everyone in this situation, you know?
And it's frustrating to me, Sasha, because it's like, it screams, I didn't think this through. You know, he didn't plan her moving there properly. He didn't plan what was going to happen. He kind of flew by the seat of his pants.
Yeah. I mean, just look at this painting, right? Like, that's literally what their relationship is. Like, first of all, Jenny's confessional about this is how they do it. They do things with their hands. Like, what? Like, it's not food that he's eating with this man. Like, you're telling me there's not a paint store in all of India? Like, come on.
Did it bug anyone else that they didn't use paint tape? Like, just watching it all drip down to the ground just really, like, aggravated me watching that.
Well, my favorite part about you saying that is that this was supposed to be a therapeutic thing they did as a couple.
My first instinct was like, oh my God, what are you doing? Like, I couldn't watch any longer. It was really giving me PTSD.
Right. And that's exactly when I was like, I need to like pause this for a second, because, you know, it's like, give Sumit a confessional about, you know, why he chose to mix it with his hand, because he's lazy, not because, you know, Jenny saying like, oh, this is how India is. Like, it's not. Like, what do you mean?
Sumit is an underprepared individual who didn't get the proper tools and is literally, again, buying random colors of paint and hoping it mixes well. Like, come on.
It's such a great shot of like his actual life and relationship. Like, it's just so fitting that like he's just throwing it together, kind of letting it go and seeing what happens.
Yeah. And for me, there's not much else to talk about here with them. Do either of you have anything else you want to say about the lovely couple before we move on?
No.
I just have one last thing, is that this delaying thing is like, unfortunately, also an Indian like characteristic. Like when you go to India and if you're even like getting something tailored, they do actually say like, yeah, we'll get it done. You know, like it'll happen. So I'm like trying to figure out if this is like Sumit or this like, you know, like we'll get it done like mentality. So right. Like, I'm interested to see that.
I see. Yeah. So whether or not it's him being like, it'll get done, so it doesn't matter, we don't have to think about it, or if it's like I need to delay this as long as possible so that nothing goes wrong in my relationship.
It's probably both, let's be honest.
Sumit does seem like it could be both for him. Okay, so Bobby, where do you want to go next? What couple are we going to speak on next?
Yeah, I think that we definitely need to talk about America and Mexico's favorite couple in Kenny and Armando, and just the amazing scene that we saw last week with the proposal. And then going into this week, they're still celebrating, having a celebration dinner. And they go to talk about Kenny meeting Armando's family. And will Armando tell them that they're engaged? You know, is that too much information to share with them? And it really like tugs on your heartstrings to watch Armando get so, you know, so upset kind of, and also just nerve wracked that he has to do this. And it's really unfortunate that, you know, we still live in a world that is not fully accepting of other people and, you know, and who they love. And to see this, it's just from an emotional standpoint, it really breaks my heart. But I'm also happy at the same time, because they're going to be able to stay together. They're going to make this, you know, amazing thing turn into a marriage. And they're just, everything about them is just so amazing to watch. And like you said last week on the podcast with Liana, I still don't understand why they're on their show. They're like too good for this show, but I'm happy that they're here, and to watch them and to see the love that they have for each other grow, it's been amazing to watch. And I really hope that when we do see them meet his family, I just hope that it goes well and that everything is accepted.
Yeah, Sasha, to me, this couple is too good to be true. And like Bobby alluded to, I'm like, they're too good for this show. I do think that the back end of this season, when they meet the parents next week, that is why they were cast on this show. I think that's what, where all the drama is going to be. It's very clear that Armando is uncomfortable with PDA because of how nervous he is about the way people are going to be, because unfortunately, you know, it's to this day, there's still going to be struggle. They're still not going to be accepted properly. And it's going to cause some discomfort because people are, you know, for lack of a better term, buttholes about things and say things that are insensitive and awful. So my question to you, Sasha, is how do you feel about Kenny and Kenny's want for Armando to tell his parents they're engaged? Do you think that Kenny has the right to want this, or do you think it's a little too much and he should just leave it to Armando whenever Armando wants?
Yeah, I think that Kenny needs to leave. Let it be.
Thank you.
Because there's so many reasons why, but I think the biggest, at least from what we see on the show, is like their love languages are so different. Like Armando really, you know, loves to like do things, to shower with gifts. And I think Kenny needs like affection and PDA. And I think this is actually going to be step one of their, you know, the cracks that might be showing up. Because I don't know if y'all saw, but in the dinner, you see physically Armando is getting upset. Like he's literally, I thought he was going to throw up at the table. And you can tell that he's trying to figure out, how do I process this? And I think he's right that his family should meet Kenny first. digest that and then move to, you know, figuring out next steps. And I think that, you know, I empathize with Kenny that this is his needs, and his needs necessarily don't trump Armando's. And you're in Mexico, you're not in America as well. So that's where I also think that their relationship is going to face a little bit of these roadblocks, where they need to almost compromise and figure out a middle ground, because currently they're both struggling.
Yeah, big, big time. And that's the thing, is that Kenny moves from America to Mexico, leaves his family behind. That's hard for him. And now Armando's living with him, and now they're engaged. I think part of Kenny, Bobby, and tell me if I'm wrong or if I'm misreading, I kind of feel like Kenny, I 100% agree with you, Sasha, that his love language is physical touch. There's just no other way to go about it. It definitely seems like that's what he needs. But my thing is that I feel like some of Kenny's approaches are a little bit like a, well, I did this for you, now this is where you do a thing for me. Like, just hold my hand, I moved here to be with you. Am I wrong? Or do you just think it's one of those things where he wants, like, what is your read on it, is what I'm trying to get.
Yeah, 100%. That's 100% exactly right. I think that he feels like, okay, now I've done a step for you, now I want you to take a step for me. And it's like a back and forth thing. And maybe that's how his view in relationships is. But honestly, he needs to slow down and let Armando go at his own pace. We're not in America. Like, this is, there's different circumstances here. Also, his family's not 100% on board with everything. So you need to give them time. You need to give them time to process. Like he says, you need to give time for these people to really understand what your relationship is, who you are, that you're not just some guy that just came out of nowhere and into his life and now you're engaged. I feel like that's just coming on too strong when you're at least, you know, just getting to meet them. So I do agree with you. I think that it's almost like a back and forth thing where I do something for you, now here, do something for me. But I feel like eventually Armando's going to push back a little bit. And I think he's going to be like, listen, we need to go at my pace because this is my family and this is what I feel comfortable with. And I love you, but I want to take it slow just in front of them, because this is how our culture is. This is how I need to do things and process.
Yeah. And I honestly side with Armando as well. I think it has to kind of go on at Armando's pace. No one should be pressured to do and behave in a way where they don't want to or are not comfortable to. And if, especially with Armando, it's very obvious that he eventually wants to get there, but he's not there. So I think the fact that he even wants to get there, I would like Kenny to understand and to follow through with. But I mean, again, Sasha, and I can't emphasize this enough, this is how little I have to pick on them about, because they're just such an incredible couple. Like, they really are.
Oh, I agree. I feel like we're actually, like, you know, Maslow's hierarchy, right? Like, we're actually at level 3 and 4 with Kenny and Armando. We're like, we're not fighting about the basic stuff, right, as the other couples, but we're thankfully they have that sorted, so we can actually dig into like their actual relationship. And that's why, as you were speaking, I also, like, a question came up for me, is that Kenny, right, moved to another country, right? That's a huge sacrifice. Will anything measure up to that?
Right. Like, it's interesting because I recently had this, right? I moved from Canada to the US, which is not that big of a move. It's not like that big of a difference in a way. But sometimes I do think about that, of like, well, I did this. Does Liana now feel like, oh, well, Puya did such a big gesture? I think it's a thing that comes into play. I do think it's a thing that, well, like, what, like, let's talk about it transactionally. What would Armando have to do for it to, quote, equal up to moving countries for somebody, right? Like, what's the next big one there? And I feel like that's the problem, where I sort of think that Kenny kind of looks at it a little transactionally, because I never for a second have thought like, well, I did this, Liana, so now what's my get? So, because, like, my get is that we get to be together. So, like, that's a good thing for me. So, I don't know. I don't know what goes on in Kenny's mind. I did think, because, like, obviously he's a big family guy. He's surrounded by love all the time with, like, his daughters and the child and everything. So, I think that he needs that constant, like, affirmation of love, whether it's through touch, whether it's through words, and however it should be. And I think that with Armando being a little bit more collected outside the house, he's not getting enough of a dosage like he was before, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. And that's exactly why I feel like Armando needs to almost like speak his truth a little more instead of, I think, shriveling up. And I think their age difference might be also a factor here, where Kenny's just more established in his life and his identity versus Armando.
Oh, yeah. Like, Kenny's gone through a lot of the processes that Armando still hasn't faced yet and hasn't experienced yet. I think Armando is still coming out of that shell, whereas Kenny's been out of that shell for a while now.
Yeah.
So, and long enough, Bobby, that I think he might not, because it's one of those things. So, for example, if let's say we all went to a cliff and we're going to like jump into the water, and it's like a 5-6 meter jump, and I've done a 5 meter jump and I'm like, oh, it's no big deal. It's like 2 seconds, but you haven't done that jump. It's scary to you still. Like, you're still like, I'm hesitant. But like, no, you're like, dude, trust me, it's easy. I've done it before. But it's like, yeah, but I don't know. I don't feel comfortable doing it. I feel like it's something similar to that extent, where it's an experience that Kenny's gone through and knows is going to be okay, but Armando hasn't and is hesitant.
Absolutely. And Kenny is just, he's so fun and so awesome to watch on this show. But like you said, he's gone through all the things that possibly maybe he was fully accepted when he came out, and, you know, when he was at the early processes of being himself. And, you know, Armando's not there. Armando's still learning about, you know, who he is, trying to have that dynamic relationship with this family where they can accept him for who he is and for, you know, who he loves. And I get where Kenny's coming from in the fact that he wants to move things along because he's excited and he's passionate about this relationship, and that he thinks, you know, this is it. This is the one that I'm all in. But he has to pump the brakes a little bit. He just has to see from Armando's from his eyes and see where he's coming from in his perspective, and realize that it's just not the pace that he needs to go at. He needs to slow down. He needs to take it as slow as Armando wants, and that'll make him comfortable. That will probably take the pressure off Armando's back to have his partner really, you know, understanding and willing to take it as much time as he needs. I think it would be better for the relationship, but I do get where Kenny's coming from in the fact that he's just excited and passionate about this relationship.
Yeah. And Sasha, I guess my almost last question, I guess, with this couple is, what are your predictions for them next week when they go through and meet the family and everything? How do you think they're going to cope with it? Do you think it's going to be difficult? Do you think Kenny's going to have a hard time in this environment? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I think one, language is going to be a huge issue for Kenny, because he, you know, doesn't know Spanish. And I think from that, there's going to be a lot of issues, because I don't know how comfortable Kenny is with folks, you know, speaking loud and talking around him, right? My family speaks really loud. And if, you know, if someone doesn't understand, they think that it's an attack or, you know, whatever. So I think that's going to be an issue for Kenny first. And then I think second, he is going to want more. And I think that might cause a little bit of a conflict with him and Armando. And third, Hannah gets added to the mix, right? Like, we know that they've met before, but I really want to now see how Armando's parents are going to feel that Hannah is with these two men. So I think all of this together packaged is going to is almost like a ticking time bomb.
It really is. And like I said, everything's been smooth thus far with a little bit of conversation. I think starting next week, it's going to get more serious. It's going to start being more intense. We did the one snippet we saw for next week is that they're going to have their first case of having to deal with someone using a slur in front of them in public, which I think is going to definitely shake Armando to his core. And I want to see how Kenny guides him through it, because I think that's an important scene for us to see. And I do think that will set a lot of what goes forward with them with regards to PDA and being willing to embrace one another outside the home.
Yeah, just seeing that scene coming up for the next episode, man, that just it broke my heart. And to see him start to, you know, really get upset. And this is exactly what his main concern was, going, you know, and being as a PDA in front of people and just, you know, really showing that. It just broke my heart because it was like all of his worst fears all wrapped up into one.
No, it really is. And honestly, I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens next week. But as is the case every week with them, I'm rooting for them the most. I want everything to work out and nothing would make me happier. So let's send positive thoughts to a show that we already know has wrapped up filming and isn't live. So I'm assuming everything went fine. I'm hoping, but we'll see. Okay, Sasha, give me the next one. Who do you want to talk about next?
I think we should do Brittany and Yazan next.
Okay, I have feelings about this as I do every week. So please take it away. Take it away from me. Tell me about them.
Yeah, I think you know, we are coming off of what I think is probably the lines of the century, right? Like, you don't have to be Muslim. My wife does. So I think, you know, I need to, you know, be kinder to Brittany, but, you know, this is all clout, right? Like, this can't be a real situation. Like, I call her cloutney because, like, this is wild. But we meet, you know, Brittany in a new space. I feel like she's in a new headspace where we see her actually in a hijab and an abaya. Mm-hmm. And but cut to the confessional, which sounds almost robotic. So seems like she's trying to understand the religion. She's taking a step and she's, you know, really wanting to lean in to this part of their life together. So Yazan is excited, taking her to his family's house, which again, I was, you know, just praying that it all go well. So we meet Uncle, right, again, who is now going to play the mediator and is trying to smooth things over. I think Yazan's doing a bad job of translating for Brittany, which I think is also causing her a lot of stress. But the biggest issue that parents seem to have is that, you know, like, we don't want them to live this boyfriend girlfriend life. Like, again, what will the people say? What is society going to say? This isn't, you know, what we are okay with. And Yazan is, I think, Yazan and family is needing them to be married like yesterday. But Brittany is doing well, trying to buy some time. And she's using all the, you know, all the right words, saying, you know, I'm trying to get to know the traditions about Islam before committing to an eternal life. And this seems to get mom and dad on the right trajectory, where the uncle uses a little bit of almost scare tactic to say, do you want them to divorce? Look at some other people in our community, like, they're separating because they didn't take that time to get to know each other. And you see mom almost change her, change the way she's talking and her tone because of that, I feel. So we're almost moving to a little bit more positive space where, you know, she says, welcome home to Brittany. So, and we're just waiting on dad to come in a month. And I don't know if that's true.
Yeah. So, okay, let's jump into this. It's Sasha, it's frustrating to me because I 100% think cloutney is a thing. I definitely think that this couple is here for the TV time, for the screen time. This is not going to happen. It to me, this whole relationship is like the whole with Angela and Michael, for example, not to talk about Happily Ever After just yet. It's like all the signs are there for Angela to be like, hey, Angela, this will not work out. There were signs here upon her entering the country. When she came through with the bottle of liquor and we found out that he's hardcore Muslim and wants her to convert, I was like, this should not work out anymore. There's no way. I think that the uncle used some buzzwords to convince the family at the very least of like, well, technically they're kind of like friends. Like, it's not really a relationship. They're just friends that are getting to know each other. And I thought the divorce tactic thing was a great move because it worked. But here's the thing. We also know that she's still not divorced from her previous marriage, which they think has already happened. The dad, we don't even know if he's going to be coming, pulling up either. So what's the plan here? All they've done was successfully hit the snooze button. And after that first confrontation got messy with the parents, I don't imagine things are going to get better and better. I think the next time there's a problem, it's going to be 10 times worse. Bobby What do you think about this?
Yeah, so, well, first off, unlike my girlfriend, I don't look at spoilers past the season. She will watch one episode and be like, I have to know what happens to them, and it drives me nuts. So I honestly have no idea where this is going. And you guys might know how this all ends up, but from my perspective, I think this is absolutely crazy. Like, I think everything about this relationship, like you said, is screaming, no, it's not going to work. Like, what are you doing there? And I mean, praise this uncle, because, man, I need him to be like the intermediary for everything I do. If I have any kind of conflict, I'm going to call this guy to really work out between me and the other party, because he can really make things work. And I get it. I'm glad to see that they were able to come to a compromise with the family, especially after last time they met, how crazy things got. But I agree with you. I just don't see how this works. I think that she's clearly doing this for clout. I think that she's doing this to, you know, pump up her followers and get her music out there. I don't think she actually is in love with this guy. She doesn't know anything about him. And it screams to me, you know, just trying to be on TV. And the fact that at the end, when she's just like, oh yeah, but they don't know that I'm still not divorced yet. Like, you finally made it somewhere, some kind of headway with this relationship with her, with his parents. And yet here you are being like, oh yeah, well, you know, I won't tell him just yet, but I'm going to have to get there. I'm like, as soon as you tell him, you might not be able to go back home. Like, they might like take you away for not telling them ahead of time, or even messing with their son when you're still in a relationship. Like, this is scary. Like, I'm honestly worried for her if she doesn't come clean about this. And I understand she's trying to take it slow, but there's just no way this works. Am I right? Like, there's just no way.
I mean, Sasha, here's the thing. So next week, we're going to have Yazan's parents claim that Brittany's disrespectful behind her back. Like, how are they going to get through this? How are they going to? Because, like, she wore the hijab and the abaya and everything to kind of, like, do good by them that day. Is she going to continue wearing it all the time now? Do we really think that's going to happen? Like, what do you see in their immediate future on the show here?
Oh my God, red flags for them and for us, I think. but I think that Yazan's parents probably asked Yazan a few pointed questions, like, we're so thankful she wore a hijab and an abaya, but does she wear that every day? You know, almost like asking these questions. And I bet he answered truthfully, and questions that we probably don't even think of that they're asking. And I think that is what's causing all of this, you know, these other feelings that it's only for show. And I actually agree that it's only for show, because I think Brittany's doing this to smooth things over so that when she has to drop the gauntlet on her actual truth, then she's going to say, but look at all the good things I did. I went to mosque. I went to prayers. I, you know, did all of this. Help me. But I mean, hell is about to get unleashed. And in their near future, I'm just honestly, like, to me, this is like, grab some popcorn, because when are they going to, like, be honest with each other? Because this is like, I'm baffled at how this is still going.
Yeah, I think that it's literally that thing where you are, you know, buttering up your parents by cleaning the house and doing your chores and then asking for that new Xbox. Pearl, okay, one sec. My cat needs food. Bobby, tell me, talk about them more, a little bit more, and tell me, do you think that there is any redeeming quality here? And do you think, if we follow Sasha's logic, in the event that she does everything and then tells Yazan about the divorce not happening, do you think he's going to take it lightly? Do you think we're going to have problems?
Oh, 100% we're going to have problems. Like, I don't see how this is going to work out. She hasn't been honest with them. And I'm fully going to say that I'm not aware of how this works in their culture, because I'm not there. I never grew up in those backgrounds, but I don't know how they're going to take it. I don't know, you know, what kind of perspective they'll have on her still being married and being with their son, or his perspective of him being in a relationship with the woman that's still married. I don't know from a culture aspect, where is that going to go? And I'm worried for her. I'm worried for him. I am worried about the whole situation. I don't think that this is going to be something that's going to be able to be managed and be worked through. I think that everything that they are going through with all this other stuff built up, I think that on top of everything is just going to be maybe the tip of the iceberg. I don't know how her not being honest with them is going to work out. I don't see it working.
And let me just put it out there. I don't like Yasin. I have not liked him from the beginning. Nothing he says to me seems genuine. I don't like him. I don't. I think, again, and like, for me, it's the hardest thing about watching 90 Day potentially is after, because like, I'm all for the Hot Mess Express. If I wasn't, I wouldn't be talking about the show and enjoying watching the show. However, it's the lack of understanding your own partner that frustrates me. Because it's like, she moved here. You have expectations. You have not shared those expectations with her. She has not shared her expectations with you. And you're both now going to piss each other off for like weeks on end. So, Sasha, my question to you is, what happens when Brittany talks to her dad next and tells him this stuff? What's his reaction, do you think?
First, he's going to smile, right? Like, oh, my God. But I think her dad, or here's my hope, rather, is that you know, he's going to have her back, because I think it can get ugly otherwise. And I think he's going to come to Jordan. And I think push for her to come back home, because he didn't want her to leave in the first place, right? When he was, way back when we saw them having this conversation, dad is confused as to why she's going there. If she doesn't want to be Muslim, she's going, you know, why are you, moving if you're still wanting to hold on to this Britney rapper life that you have back home? So I think he's going to push for her to come back. And if he even sees a little bit of this, you know, how Yazan has been acting, like with the screaming and how the family has been acting, like, I think that it might actually get pretty bad. And I hope production's around.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that they are probably going to have the messiest of the tell-alls. Segments, in my opinion. I think that because once her dad sees the reaction her family has had to her, he's not going to take that sitting down, and it's going to get messy. And I definitely do think that it's going to be hard to watch. And I really hope that things don't get too bad between them, but also they are both very underprepared in the relationship. And I think they can't fault anyone but themselves for what they've signed up for. And I think they're getting what they wanted, though, which is screen time. So, Bobby, do you have any other things you want to say about this couple?
Yeah, no, I pretty much said it all. Basically, I just don't see it working. I agree with you. I think the tell-all is going to be very messy. I think that as soon as her dad gets wind of any of this conflict, I don't think he's going to like it either. So I don't see this being a relationship that's going to work moving forward. Also, just like how you were having issues with your cat, my dog is begging me to go pee, so I'll be right back. You guys go ahead without me for a second.
Oh, you got it. You got it. This is a pet-friendly podcast.
Sorry.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Okay. So, Sasha, let's save the biggest for last, I would say.
Yes.
So I think we talk about Ari and Baby, or Ariel and Binyam here. I think that's the move.
I love it. Yes. Yeah. Let's do it.
So we didn't see much from them last week, but pretty much their storyline in this episode centers a lot about the religious upbringings of their baby moving forward, and then the religious desires of baby, the father baby, not the baby baby. And Ari, we got a flashback of her saying what she wanted the religious upbringings of the child to be and the family to be. And so the first thing is, very clearly, Binyam wants the baby to be raised Catholic and wants the baby to be baptized. And Ari wants the baby to have a Jewish upbringing similar to Ari's upbringing. So where lies all the conflict is here. that literally with regards to their relationship, this is again something that they've clearly not made understood to one another, and they're in the middle of conflict. But can you talk about the meeting we saw at the beginning with the family when Baby went to meet his family?
Yeah, I first of all, from what the conversation was, like, I really see that there's so much pressure and trauma, and I think rightfully so, but from Baby's past relationship that isn't even Ari. So they are really talking about Ari, and, you know, they're still scared that she might go back to America. And in the confessional, you see his sister say, you know, we want him to marry an Ethiopian. We want someone that understands our culture and all of these things. And they're really passionate about wanting someone that's going to embrace not just their culture, but their religion. Mm-hmm. And to me, I'm so confused as to why none of these conversations happen before people move to the country.
Like, you're long distance. So the physical touch is out. You have words of affirmation and conversation. Social conversation is how you're building and maintaining this relationship. How have you not talked about what you want? How have you not spent hours upon hours fantasizing about what your future is going to look like together, what you have, expectations? Like, there's so many things that go into this. So, and it's just baffling to me that they're coming in so unprepared and so surprised about what the other ones, especially when it's something as big as religious upbringing for the child. And I say this because while not everybody has that as a big part of what they want for the upbringing or what they think of, it's clearly a big enough part of both their lives that someone should have said something.
Yeah. And I really empathize with this because I am Jewish and my partner isn't. And we actually had to have this conversation before we even decided to get serious. He actually asked me on, you know, very early on in our dating life, hey, I'm Hindu, you're Jewish. Like, you know, how does this work? And to me, that's what, you know, relationships are about. And there's so much pressure and so much just like, I don't want to break up, so we're not going to say it. I don't want her to take the baby, so I'm not going to say it. And it's like, whose fault is it going to be then? Because no one wants to go through, you know, what happened before. And, you know, he even says Ari respects my talent. And it's like, sure, Ari respects your talent, but she needs things from you. And to me, Baby is just not ready for anything. Like, I want to know from him, like, what do you want in a relationship? Because to me, this is the first episode that we've actually heard from him and heard his like needs and desires. Because before that, it was like, I'm just here to make, you know, Ari and her mom, Janice, like happy. Like, that's my role here. And come watch me dance with my ex. But, you know, I am wanting to know how you can embrace a culture and you can embrace a religion, but if you're not going to fundamentally agree on this, like, understanding versus converting are so different. So it's so frustrating to me to just watch this and see that an interfaith family is possible. There's Jews in, you know, Ethiopia. It's a thing. But, you know, it's just, I am so confused. And I think if you saw in the next episode what's going on, like, Ari is not happy.
No, she is not. And honestly, I don't blame her. Because, again, we go back to the Kenny Armando thing of, I moved, do I get the upper hand or do I get a bargaining chip because I moved? In her case, I'm saying yes, and here's why. She moved with child. She moved to have the baby there, and then they're going to start their family stage one right off the bat. There is a lot more at stake with the baby being there. And you cannot be withholding information to only reveal it after they move there and be like, oh, well, I kind of want this to be the upbringing of choice. When it's like, well, we should have maybe talked about that prior to that. I do think a little bit of Baby's interactions to me have been, let me make sure everything looks good while her mom is here. And then after that, I can kind of take the foot off the gas a little bit. That's kind of the vibe I'm getting, especially with the family this episode and them being so like pushy about, well, if she, I wish she was Ethiopian and she has to embrace the culture and that'll make us more happy. I'm like, I feel like she is embracing the culture low key, like a lot more than any of the other couples we're seeing. And also I do think that the fact that, he was with another American prior has caused them to have a bad taste in their mouth and they're kind of making Ari pay that invoice.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's actually you talking about, you know, when do we use that bargaining chip of moving? This is exactly what I was thinking where, you know, I feel like Ari took a huge risk. You know, her dad's a doctor and, you know, mom's a nurse and, you know, you're going to deliver away from that. Right. Mm-hmm. To me, that in and itself is a huge commitment to this relationship. And I did a little bit of digging and it looks like that they met Baby and Ari. Like they first started talking because Ari was wanting to help him reunite with his, like, I think, kid. So to me, like, Ari does have this, like, heart and, you know, this, like, special place for Baby. But I honestly am not sure if they're in love or is it just like we got pregnant and here we are.
Right. Like, is this an anchor, Baby? Is this a, like, now yeah. they're trying to make it work? Like, Bobby, what are your thoughts on Ari and Baby?
Yeah, I mean, I just watching them is kind of like watching two people that, you know, it's like a little fling, like it's something like young love where you really like each other, you know, you go head in, all in on this person right from the bat. And then you start to like really learn about the person and realize, you know, maybe we don't have as much in common as I thought, or maybe, you know, this person isn't the person I thought they were. I think that they're starting to get to that point because she's starting to see the relationship he wants and the things that he wants out of this relationship, like, you know, baptizing the baby. But now she has to convert to Christianity and be baptized as well. I think that's asking a lot. And from her perspective, she's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like I like you and everything. And I'm enjoying where we're going with this, but there's some definite red flags. Like, I'm not going to change who I am because you want me to. Like, I want to do everything I can for you and what you want for this baby. I know how important it is, but I'm not going to change myself completely just for you. So I think they're starting to get to their breaking point, especially her. And like, I know I don't want to get too far ahead, but you see in the spoilers for next week, she's breaking down saying she doesn't want to be there. So I think she's starting to see all these red flags and realize maybe this isn't the person I'm supposed to be with. Maybe we did rush into things and now we have a baby coming. It's kind of a weird predicament. It's unfortunate, but I don't know if I see it.
Well, like, and I feel like Sasha, so from the jump, from the beginning of us meeting them, we've been shown is these are the sacrifices and the things that Ari has accepted, right? She's moving to Ethiopia. Oh, she didn't like the first apartment. Not good enough for the baby. That's fine. We'll be okay. But another one, okay, it's still not great, but fine. Hospital was the best part. Hospital was good. Everything's good. And the mom signed off on that. That's great. But then he's dancing with his ex. She's being very accepting and okay with the situation. Like, it's fine. I agree. It's cool. The one thing she wants now is this. And it gets sprung onto her that, hey, the conversion needs to be a thing. And she's like, well, I don't think I want to do that. And now it's going to get real next week, like Bobby alluded to, when her mom is about to leave and leave her here with baby. And I do feel like a part of her is in of the mindset of once mom leaves, now I've committed to this. Up until mom being here, it's still not a full thing. It's kind of like when you move to university and your parents drive you up. Once they leave, you're in university alone. This is kind of similar, but with a lot more world and life implications to it.
Yeah, like, why y'all at church talking about this baptism? Like, that's what I'm trying to figure this out, because y'all, you know, like, you couldn't figure this out before. And yeah, I think her safety net is leaving. I think there's a lot of, you know, like, comfort, right, in having your mom close to you, even if you're in another country. And that university feeling is so true. Like, I mean, I remember I was on vacation right before I went to university, and I was anytime someone brought up college, I started crying. And I was so stressed to be away from my mom for the first time in my life. So I understand where Ari's coming from. And I need her to, like, then make a decision, right? Like, I think that she's still in this, like, oh, I want to know more from you, baby. Like, so you want to raise your child Orthodox Christian? Like, what does that look like for you? Tell me more. Like, will you go to synagogue with me? And like, to me, I feel like she's in for such a rude awakening, because once mom's gone, I think he's going to take over and be like, you moved here. Period.
Yeah. Like, I don't think it's going to be like Andre levels of abrasive and like, oh, I'm in control now. But I genuinely do think that he's going to, like, he's going to pump the brakes on what he's been doing to appease her mom. And then once the mom's gone, he's really going to put his foot down. Already he's being like, because like also his family is not helping, because his family is kind of pushing him in a way of like, hey, you have to do these things. You have to, she has to do this. She has to embrace the culture. She has to have the religion. So it's not going to make it any easy on her. And she's pregnant. So she's going to be going through the stress of pregnancy and pressure from his family and him and her surroundings. It's going to be a struggle, Bobby. And I guess my question to you is, do you think that this relationship will last?
Oh man, it's hard to see. I really wanted to, especially since there's a baby involved, and I want the best upbringing for this baby. But I think in a cultural aspect, like, this isn't the same thing as the Brittany and Yazan situation. Like, I just feel like those two are just so far different people. I think this is more, you know, a cultural thing where I don't think that they're going to be fully on board. Like, I think that she's scared being in this country. Like, maybe she's nervous. I think, you know, like you said, I think that the pregnancy hormones are definitely playing a part too. I'm dealing with that right now with my girlfriend. She's 7 months pregnant and she just will, you know, get upset out of nowhere. And I don't know what to do. And I feel bad. And she's like, it's fine. It's just a part of this. And having the cameras there, a new country, a baby coming, and all that put into one, I feel for her. I can't imagine what she's going through. And so I can see that the pressure is there. I hope for their sake, because they have a baby, they're able to work it out. I just don't know from a cultural aspect if it's going to work.
Yeah, I guess, Sasha, the last thing for me is, I imagine this is not the last time we're going to see the mom, right? Once she leaves, I think we're going to still see her side of the story through either phone calls. We're going to see more from Ari's side of the family. Do you think it's going to get to a point where, even if Ari doesn't end up being the one to say it, her parents are going to kind of pull rank and be like, hey, you need to come back, and they're going to intervene?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. They seem to be a very close-knit family, even her, I think her siblings as well. I think that they're going to, you know, bring up, like, listen, you want to raise your child Jewish, and you want to do all of these things, and he's saying all of this to you. I think that her family might even bring up his ex, the ex-baby mama, who, to say, look, you know, she left him too for all of these reasons, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, like, there might be some truth to that, and you need to understand it. And, you know, I think Janice already, like, her mom started sowing a little bit of that doubt, not the last episode, but the episode before, where he's dancing at the club, right? And you hear the mom saying, oh, so when you're going to be sleeping, this is what he's going to be doing.
Yeah.
So I think that she's already started sowing these seeds. And that's why I think Ari's looking for a way out. Like, I just think that once baby's family is going to start pressuring her, you know, she's at the priest is telling her, you know, you need to convert. But, you know, if she uses a bottle, maybe that's fine and she doesn't need to get baptized instead. I don't know. But I'm just thinking all of this is going to come crashing down, and she's going to want to just, you know, eject on the parachute.
Yeah. And honestly, on that note, for me, we can eject from them and jump right into the final couple. Maybe the best for last is not putting it in a pleasant way. What I'm trying to say is the best for last is, dramatically speaking, this was by far the best choice for the last couple to talk about, because my God, did a lot happen with Devin and Jihoon this episode. So I don't even know where I want to begin with them, to be very honest with you. I guess I'll just go chronologically and talk about. So last episode, he let go of Drusilla and it was a big deal. He just let her run away. And of course, nothing happened. We know nothing happened. The way this family is behaving is like she ran onto the highway. Like they're so mad that Devin's mom is yelling. Devin herself is yelling. Ji-hoon's getting stressed out. Ji-hoon's saying, don't yell at me. And then it's a whole hot mess. And then Devin is sitting there with Ji-hoon. Ji-hoon gets overwhelmed. Ji-hoon starts crying. Devin shows no remorse for him. Ji-hoon's mom pops up next to him. And Ji-hoon immediately does that thing that kids do when their parents see them crying. They stop and they're like, I'm not crying. So he does that. And then he cries again. It's a whole hot mess, Sasha, with this couple. And then on top of everything, when they're doing their translation conversation, Ji-hoon and Devin, this like weird translation egg thing they're using is just horrendous at translating. Like, I don't know why they can't just use Google Translate. I have a feeling that would work better than what they're using, but none of the sentences he's saying are what I'm hearing here. And this was just very uncomfortable for me to watch. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I agree with you. This was really hard to watch. You know, they love their curb talk time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it actually was like I needed to pause again in this moment to say, like, this is real. Like, this is their real life. And I kept going back and forth like you, Puya, where you were saying, you know, I agree with you that she's fine, right? Drusilla's fine, like she ran. But how is this being made into a bigger deal? And I actually, you know, did a little, like, I was like, what are the stars saying about it? And actually, Devin did a whole live about this, saying that this, it wasn't edited the right way. And that apparently the footage actually wasn't shown and it was just a glimpse. She was already putting Taeyang in the car seat and Ji-hoon was texting on the phone. So as soon as you see him running, it was actually the second time Drusilla ran, not the first. Yeah. That's what caused the fight. And apparently she did run off and there was a car that almost hit her. And instead of grabbing her, allegedly, he turned around and started screaming at Devin in front of, you know, her mom while the film crew wasn't there. So apparently that is why it turned into this huge deal.
I see. Well, it's even that is I'm so conflicted, Bobby, with this couple, because I think both of them are very much toxic to one another. Both of them have really caused the other person despair, problems, stress, anxiety, whatever you want to call it. So, Bobby, what's your take on Devin and Ji-hoon in this moment? And, like, let's specifically talk about this whole debacle with Drusilla running. Like, just give me everything. Give me your download on them, please.
Yeah, well, before hearing what you just said about the reality of the situation, I was, as crazy as it sounds, because I can't stand the guy, but I was on Ji-hoon's side because I just was like, okay, yes, he let go of the child for a second. She ran away. Maybe you see him like in a dead sprint too for a second, just running his ass. So it was like, okay, she got away for a second and they were able to catch her. Like, why is this such a huge deal? It's like you said, it's not like she's on the highway. The show didn't show us the true dynamics of the situation and the gravity of the situation. So to hear that he let her go for a second time because he was texting and that she almost got hit by a car. Yeah, now I understand where their frustration and anger comes from, because, I mean, man, put the phone down, like put your kid away. Like, I couldn't imagine doing that with my little daughter that's coming. Like, I would always make sure my 100% attention is on her, especially when you're in public, because anything can happen. So that is frustrating to hear. This couple, man, I don't see how they're going to last. I don't see how they're going to be able to make it by, because it just seems like every single day there's an issue. Like, I don't understand how they are still together and how they're making this work, because it's one day he'll do something, one day she does something, and it's mainly him. But my God, they're not getting their stuff together. And it's really unfortunate because there's two kids involved, you know, two small children that this affects. And I my heart goes out to those kids, because watching them, it's just so frustrating. And I 100% agree with you. That egg needs to be shattered somewhere on that street. They need to take it to the curb and curb stomp that dang egg to the ground, because it is ridiculous hearing that thing. It is not saying anything close to what they're trying to convey. And it just comes across as so monotone and so unpassionate about the actual way they're saying something. When you see the translation at the bottom of the screen, it's, you know, sometimes it's passionate, or it's very much so, like, there's a lot of feelings in it. The egg's just like, I love you a lot. Like, it's just not, it's so frustrating. So I get it. They need to have Google Translate. Completely agree. But back to the situation, the way that she reacted, having no, you know, remorse to how he's feeling, how he's sobbing uncontrollably and saying, you don't understand where I'm coming from. You don't look at it in my perspective. She's just like dead on the inside is what it feels like. She's just had enough to hear with him and his antics that nothing he can say or do or cry or run to his mom is going to work. And I get that. But also, I just don't see how they make this work, how they make this last, because every day it's one thing after another. The mom hates him at this situation. The other mom is just always going to have his side. It's just a mess. It's an absolute mess.
It really is. And Sasha, my next question is, let's talk about Devin's mom in the midst of all this. Because, you know, we're talking about the egg not really showing compassion, passion, anything. Devin's mom has one emotion, and that's rage. So tell me a little bit about this interaction she has with Ji-hoon. And what are your thoughts on her, what she's saying and how she's behaving?
So I really had to, again, like, why is she like this? Like, this is my biggest question. Because I think that Devin is 23, I believe, right? So Devin had Drusilla when she was probably 2019, maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the mom, Alicia, I believe, yeah, is her name, had to step in as probably the parent to Drusilla. So I think that that is already one layer that we're not necessarily seeing, where I think her instincts are that that's my child, instead of maybe that's my grandchild. In addition to that, I think she's also super out of her element in South Korea. Like, since she landed cursing up a storm, you know, just like willy nilly, just saying anything. So I think that all of that has been building up, and she admitted that she just doesn't want her daughter and her grandkids to live there. She wants them to come back. So I think whatever nice they, you know, did right before this incident, like, I don't think it was genuine on her part. Maybe she meant it on the surface, but I think in her heart of hearts, I don't think she meant it. And that's why she, you know, this rage, I think, comes from this frustration, this like lack of instinct that you're seeing from Ji-hoon. Because I think as a parent, I don't think he's built that yet. I don't think he's developed his instincts of, like, you know, let's not like let a child like Drusilla especially to, you know, run. And I think he's under tremendous pressure. But I think Devin's mom is wrong. Like, you cannot yell at another like human being. This is a grown man. He's 30. Like, you can't, you know, just speak to him that way and, you know, berate him. And Ji-hoon is pushing his mom away. So he's not letting his mom berate, at least yet, Devin. So who are you to come at him this way, right? Like, let it be their unit, and you can talk to Devin about it, but I think it's so wrong to parade Ji-hoon, you know, again, to get berated by not one family member, but two people. And then it's like, so is Devin, letting Ji-hoon be the dad, right? Like, that's another question, because she kept saying, like, he knows how to, like, how Drusilla is, and he knows how to be a dad. But I want to know, like, have you actually spoken with him that, hey, you're a stepdad, but here's, like, all of what I need from you when it comes to, you know, raising this child. And like, no shade, but like, do they discipline Drusilla? Like, I don't know.
I don't. Drusilla seems like she gets away with whatever she wants. And she is almost seems at times the most sane person in that family, which is insane to say. And I do think that I love your point about Ji-hoon's mom not being involved. We do see that in the snippet for next week, she will be involved. And I think it's Ji-hoon's mom's revenge. It does seem like it to me. I think that the whole thing is he's agreed to the terms of the compromise that they have together. He's agreed that, hey, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to turn everything around. I'm going to get us a place. I'm going to get a job. He's doing that, right? So at this point, he's already accepted that he's going to do that. And at this point, Devin has already like dug into him. There is no need to continue kicking this man while he's down. As much as I do think he's a man child who is not nearly well equipped enough to be a responsible adult and father with the family and with the whole family, like two kids and a wife and deal with his family. It's a lot I don't think he's capable of. But I do think that she just like dug into him for the sake of digging into him. And she's just angry for just the sake of being loud. And I didn't like that at all. But with this, I just don't think this couple is going to last. I think they are both, they would both literally be at the front page of the Hot Mess Express for the other way for me. Like they're both doing things wrong. They're both doing too much in a negative way. And I just don't think that they are made to last. I think we talked about Ari and Baby kind of being in an anchor situation. I think these two more than any couple are in that anchor situation. I mean, we're talking about their first encounter ended up with a pregnancy. So I think that they've bit off more than they can chew. I think that both families are reaching their wits' end. I think the best person from this family is Ji-hoon's dad, who seems like the most sympathetic man alive, and Drusilla. And then everyone else is kind of a garbage person. So, yeah.
I agree with you guys, too, in the fact that he's trying to get his stuff together. Like, he said that he's willing to make these changes for them and for the children. And I feel like when the mom goes off on him, it's all of that stress, all of that anger and frustration with him and the situation that they're in just came out. And the fact that she's like, if anything happens to Drusilla, I will kill you. Like, I was just like, whoa, okay, this lady is just full rage mode. She's seeing red. She is not willing to compromise at all. She just thinks he's in the wrong. And I think that maybe it was good for her to get it all out in a way, because now maybe they can move forward. Like, the fact that she didn't accept his apology, I felt like it was like, okay, come on. This kid ran away for a second. You guys were able to catch her. It sucks that it happened, but let's move on. It's not like he's not a horrible, horrible person because he, you know, didn't pay attention for 2 seconds. And I side with him on that. Then I think that it was way overblown, way dramatic. And the fact that she's not wanting to, you know, accept his apology and saying that if anything happens to Drusilla, she'll kill him. I just really was just like, come on, this is way too dramatic.
I think ultimately where I want to end it with them is that I enjoyed their first season. It was fun to see. This season, it's just been making me more and more uncomfortable to think that a couple could be so underprepared and then just have such miscommunication to the point where I do not think they needed half the interactions they did this episode. And I think the simple fact is that the mom has her own agenda that she wants to bring into this. I think the mom's mission is what Debbie's mission is what Ari's mom's mission is, hey, if I even feel that there's a thing going wrong here, I'm taking my child and I'm going back home. Like, that's what I'm doing. So, and I think she's looking for a reason to make that happen. Ultimately, to end this, Sasha, give me your prediction for Ji-hoon and Devin.
So spoiler alert, I guess, because I have been looking at Devin's YouTube channel, but I don't think they're together, but I think they're not separated either. I think it's almost like, hey, maybe we'll just be in our different countries and kind of like keep up appearances because we maybe want to come back for season 3 or, you know, maybe like we want to make it happen for our kid. Like, I'm not exactly sure why, but I like, it's so high school to me, this like going back, then leaving, then coming back together. Because you see at the start of the show, she has the mask on, mm-hmm. and that they're in quarantine. So it's obvious that she stayed for a little bit. But I don't believe that this is built to last. I think this is definitely an unfortunate thing that they're staying together for Taeyong. I just don't know how long they can live off of just that.
Yeah, I do think that we're going to start getting to a point where we're going to have to call a DOA or a TOD on this. I don't think it's going to last. We'll see. I 100% agree with you, though. They are definitely going to try and milk another season out of this, because the appearance fee for the show might not be a lot, but the American counterpart gets that money, and it's still a pretty penny to be on a show, you know, once a week for a little bit, keep your appearances up, keep your publicity up. So I think that 100% that's what's happening, and we'll just have to see. We'll just have to see where they go.
Yeah.
Where they go on this crazy train. Yeah. Okay. So then, If I've done my math correctly, that about wraps up The Other Way. I don't see any other couples here. But Sasha, I'm kind of sad that you haven't been caught up with Happily Ever After, because I don't want to say goodbye to you here.
Like, oh, me too.
This was so much fun getting to talk to you. Thank you so much for being on today.
Thanks for having me. I was glad I got to talk with about these crazies. Like, this is literally what I do Monday nights.
This is not going to be the last time we're going to have you here. I'll tell you that right now. How about you give us any plugs if you want to put your social media on here, let people know where they can find you for your takes on 90 Day and beyond.
Yeah, I like to talk about, you know, reality TV. I watch a few random shows. I like to tweet about them in GIFs. So send me lots of GIFs if you want. But you can follow me on Twitter at funsize_04.
All right. Perfect. So then on that note, Sasha, we're going to say goodbye to you.
Sasha, it was great getting to talk to you too. I look forward to podcasting you with you on other shows in the future as well.
So excited. Bye, y'all.
Take care. All right, Bobby.
Yes.
Before we proceed, we're going to take a quick pause for some messages. All right, and we are back, and we got to rip this bandit open, man. We got to talk about Happily Ever After. I know it's a hard one. The show is not nearly as fun as The Other Way has a tendency of being, but there's a lot to cover, and this could go any which way. So let's start this off with, which couple do you want to talk about?
Yeah, let me bust out my notes here. Let's see here. I definitely want to get, oh, there's so many just to get through. But, you know what? Let's start with Kalani and Asuelu. Okay. We see them still dealing with the situation. His parents or his family wants them to give money to his parents, and
yeah,
the unfortunate situation that is, because they're just financially not able to do that. He's working part time, and the situation is really coming to head. He goes to visit his sisters and his mother, and he brings them, you know, gifts. He brings them stuff for the kids, stuff for his mom, brings his mom corned beef, I think it is. So like he's doing everything he can. We saw last week with the food trucks, we saw him give $100, and it's still not enough. And it's really sad to see. They want the money. They want money to his parents to provide for them, which in his culture is what the head of household for, you know, I don't know if it's each of the families or if it's just the male in the family. All I know is they want money. They don't want anything less. It's really sad because it feels like that's all they care about. They just care about the money. She goes all the way there to see them, and it's like she doesn't even care about the kids. She doesn't care about Kalani or him. She doesn't want to be there for them. It just feels like it's a money grab. And it breaks my heart just to watch this, because I can appreciate, as much as Asuelu can act like a baby sometimes, I am imagining myself in his shoes, and the way he's handling the situation is just so commendable in my eyes, because he's saying, listen, I can't do it. I want to do it. My heart's there. I love you. Here's these other things, but I have a family to provide for. I he gets a little dramatic. He's like, my kids will die. Like, obviously we know that won't happen, but it does, it would put a hardship on this family and they can't afford it. So to see his family still not accepting that, that they need money, I can't imagine being in his shoes and the way that he's going about it when he leaves his sister's house because his sister's just berating him, berating his wife. I would have done the same thing. I totally get where he's coming from. And the family, I know how it is in Samoan culture. I know how they, what they expect, but in America, we're not all rich. We're not all wealthy. Maybe that's perceived on the outside that, oh, you live in America, you must be wealthier or whatnot. But that's not how it is. You know, a lot of people, you know, including myself, we have our struggles. We have things that we have to provide for our families or for, you know, others. And we don't have all the resources that some more privileged people may have. So I understand completely where he's coming from. And I really, really hope that, and I don't think it's possible, but I really hope that his family opens up and opens their eyes to their situation and what they're able to, you know, manage.
Yeah. So I don't think that's going to happen, sadly. And that's, I say that because of the second scene we got with them this episode.
Yes.
I will say that I've been on the record to call Asuelo a man child. I've been floored by the way he's handled the situation with his mom these last couple of episodes. It's been very mature, very much standing his own ground, not blaming Kalani, siding with Kalani. The fact that he got so mad that he stormed out of that house, the mom's house, was incredible. I commend him for that. I love that. And I have egg on my face because she loved the gifts she got. I thought that the gifts made no sense. The whole family loved the gift. So the canned food, the traditional garb, like all of it worked out real well. That's awesome. His sister does not like Kalani. And I think that's my biggest takeaway from all this, is that the sister doesn't like Kalani and the sister keeps blaming Kalani for the money not coming through and trying to force his hand to like give the money. And I loved his clapback of, hey, you've been here longer than me. I just got here. So I'm learning. I'm like trying to like adjust. So mm-hmm. I like that shut down. And then we go to the goat farm later in the episode. And I love that both him and his mom had the same reaction of like, oh, this would be delicious. It's like, guys, like, don't say that in front of the kids, maybe. But like, I feel you, but don't say that.
Or in front of that goat farmer, because apparently she doesn't handle, you know, minimize the chasing would be appreciated, something she says. So
yeah, it was like, yeah, can you not mess with my goats, please? Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
can you control your child is essentially what she was trying to say in a polite way.
Yeah, but in my head, I'm like, what else does one do at a goat farm but like chase goats and pet them? Like, what did you expect was going to happen with children here?
I would have totally expect that's like okay that they run around with the goats. It's not like it's like, you know, hurting the goat or doing anything like that.
Right.
That blew my mind. Like I used to, when I was in high school, raise sheep and sell them at auction. And that's not like stressing them out completely. Like, yeah, it's not great, but come on. Like, you have a goat farm where kids are allowed. What do you expect? That was just really like, okay, then why are you running this?
Yeah, it was a very much of a question mark for me as well. And then so at the goat farm, he's only the mom shows up, not his sister, which is good for him, I thought. But even though he gets emotional and he does exaggerate a little bit by talking about like the homelessness thing, his mom gets sad and says she doesn't want to see him cry. But then kind of still says, yeah, I'm going to need that money, though. And I think it was at this point where both Kalani and Asuelu kind of realized that, hey, this shakedown's not going to stop. Like, this is basically a part of, it's supposed to be a fiber of our relationship, and that's not okay. I liked his confessional early where she said, I love my family, I love my wife, and I think that I can't help both. Realizing that that's almost not possible and it has nothing to do with Kalani, I think is a very good step for them. Mm-hmm. They are a couple I did not really like in their first season. I didn't like Kalani and her side of the family, but I love them now, and I'm actively rooting for them now. So I'm very excited for them. And then I'm very intrigued to see what happens next week when Kalani confronts his mom and his sister, because I think that's going to be a fiery episode to watch for them.
Oh, I can't wait for that. And the fact that she talks about, oh, if she would have touched me or put a hand on me, I would have dropped her. I'm like, oh, you go, girl. I'd be right there with you. Like, I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to see what happens with them and the situation they're in, because they're completely the ones in the right here. It's a horrible situation, and it's really sad, because you could see how much he loves his family and how much he wants to provide for them. He just financially cannot. And the fact that the family is not opening their eyes to that is shocking to me. It really breaks my heart, because he always talks about, oh, I want to go visit them. We saw that play out this season, how that was a thing and how that tore him up, that he couldn't go visit his family. And now they're finally here, and all they care about is getting money from him. I'm thinking, if he would have gone there, all they would have done the whole time, and where would they have been able to run to? Because the whole time they would have been berating them for money there. So it just breaks my heart. The fact that his sister says Kalani's controlling him and controls what he does, it's just not true. He's his own man. At the same time, he respects Kalani. He respects his family. And he's going to do what he has to do to provide for them in this situation. And it's just not attainable to be able to come up with the resources to give his mom and his parents what they want. And you have other kids. Like, why can't the other kids provide for you more? Like, it makes no sense to me where his sister especially is coming from. His mom, at least, you know, it feels like she loves him, but at the goat farm, like, it feels like she loves him, but she loves his money more. And Kalani is 100% the viewers when she's just like, he breaks down to you and says he cannot, you know, pay for it, and he's got to provide for his kids. And then you're like, oh, yeah, but I'm still going to need that money. Like, she was 100% us in that situation, just watching this, being like, this is crazy. What is going on? How is this real life?
Yeah, because I think for me, I do understand the familial, the cultural understanding of, hey, as our child, like, you should help us, you should provide. That's fine. But the lack of understanding, the disconnect with, hey, he has two babies and a family needs to support, and he's only working a part time job, and you have no sympathy. That gets no sympathy from me. So I'm rooting for them. I hope that everything works out with the family. I'm just very happy that they're both on the same page. So. Yeah. And I think on that note, I'm ready to switch it up and let's talk about another couple here. And let's go with one that's probably going to be a quicker one. And let's talk about Tanya and Sinjin.
Okay.
So Tanya and Sinjin, last we left them, are in South Africa. And Sinjin, their whole storyline right now is that Sinjin is going to go see his mates. And Tanya's been concerned because, like, he tends to go wild at parties with his brothers, and like they go ham. So she's worried about that. And for the most part, what we see from Sinjin this episode is him going to the pub, going to the bar to hang out with his bro bros. And my God, when I say bro bros, I'm not just saying that because they're two dudes. I'm saying that because these are proper bros. Like, they are rowdy folk. Loud as could be, yelling over nothing, but very excited to see their guy. They call him fat because that makes sense, of course. You know, came from America, must be putting on the pounds. Like, that's a thing. Oh, and then they didn't point out that he did use pounds and not kilos, which I thought was funny because I also go pounds, even though I grew up with kilos as the measurement.
Oh, really?
But yeah. But then they talk about that. They talk about all that. They ask him how he feels about, you know, being where he is now, being married. We find out that his friends, who former roommates, were not fans of Tanya at the time, felt like she was a little bit controlling. Kind of, it sounds like they share the same sentiment now. And then Sinjin talks about how he was kind of in a lust bubble, and that led him to the States. And then when the whole K-1 visa gets brought up, he says, yeah, I had no choice but to get married. That was the only way I could stay. So more and more to me, Sinjin keeps alluding to this fact of, like, I wouldn't have gotten married if I could help myself. I don't really want to be in this. I still want to figure myself out. He is that free spirit guy who kind of wants to, you know, not be tied down. And he keeps alluding to that in these situations. But it's like, dude, the writing's on the wall. You're married now. You can't, like, it's done. Like, I don't know what you're thinking about here, but you're bound to Tanya now. You're bound to the States. That's where you live. So anyways, we kind of, with them, this was the meat and potatoes of it. And then other than that, they get some lagers, they get some Jaeger shots, because of course they do. And that's pretty much where we leave it with them. But what are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, so first off, let me talk about these two goobers and Andrew and James, his buddies that he goes to meet up with. My God, I have never seen in my life people as passionate when they speak that I've seen with these two. Like, every sentence has to be like the most important thing they've ever said. Like, what is going on with you and Tanya? I'm like, whoa, who talks like that? Like, is that a cultural thing? Is that like a South African thing? Every single time I hear them talk, I'm just like nodding my head to each word that they're trying to pronounce. Like, I'm like, where are we going with this? It really, really was interesting to me. But secondly, about them, while I'm watching this, I'm a bartender and I deal with people like this all the time. But my God, this gave me so much PTSD of some of the bad situations I've seen at the bar watching these guys drink. Like, I don't know how that bar kept bringing them drinks. Like, to me, I would have been like Oprah being like, you're getting cut off and you're getting cut off. Like, there's no way I would have let these guys get to that point because they're clearly intoxicated. Maybe it was the alcohol talking, but oh my gosh, I couldn't handle it. Being a bartender, I couldn't watch these guys for very long because it was just like, I can't. I have to stop you from drinking. You are way too intoxicated. But beyond all that, I thought they did bring up some good points, especially when they talked about how Tanya had lived with them for a little bit. And when she moved in, she was basically moving into their situation, their house, and telling them what to do. I've actually dealt with that in a situation in college where my buddy's girlfriend, who's now his wife, moved in with us, and it was a total, you know, guy atmosphere, probably not the cleanest place. We were dumb young college guys that like to drink and have fun. And here we are. She moves in. She's telling us we need to clean this. We need to, you know, make our beds. We need to do all this stuff. I'm like, whoa. Listen, you came and are living with us for it right now. Like, this isn't like, this is our place. You came into the situation. What's going on? And I'm a grown adult now, and I realize, okay, yeah, that's probably how I should have been living my life. This, you know, what I should have been doing. That I totally get where she's coming from, where the atmosphere we were in is just not acceptable. And I think in their perspective, they're still in that mode, it seems like, where they're not understanding that, you know, this is our house. You don't tell us how to live. And I get that. No one should tell you how to live in your own home. But man, I just see Tanya exactly in that sentence, the way he talked about her and how he said that, you know, she was telling them basically how to live their lives. So that really transferred over to their relationship, I feel like. And I feel like that's how St. John feels in his actual relationship. And the fact that they ask him, are you happy? And he says, I could be happier. That really shows a lot. And
red flags right there.
A lot of red flags. And the fact that, oh, you know, are you having fun? I'm having so much fun right now. I might never leave. Like, there's so many red flags in this conversation. And the saying is true. You know, when you drink and what you say when you drink is actually how you feel. I think a lot of people, you know, your guard is down. You say more things that maybe sometimes you don't mean, but a lot of stuff that you do. And so I think we were able to see the real St. John and how he really feels because he's vulnerable because he's around his friends. I think that there are problems, but I really hope these two fix it and work it out because I think that they're good together. I just don't know if his life and her life match up right now.
Yeah, I think they're in different stages of their lives. And I think that's the biggest detriment because like the whole like the bros talking about her coming in and cramping their style. I was like, I've been in that very situation myself where one of the roommates like partners comes in and kind of switches some stuff around and has some feedback. Yeah. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily because, you know, it gets pretty gross up in some of these bro houses. So I'll just leave it at that. So I'm all for that. I do think that Sinjin is just letting these things be a crutch to his real feelings, which I think he didn't want to commit. And I think he is in denial about it. And I think it's not healthy for him and his relationship for him to keep being in a position where he's kind of shading his living situation. He's kind of shading, bad mouthing the relationship, because in the future, that's going to come back to bite him. I think he's still hung up on the soulmate discussion as well from last season. That hasn't changed. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens with them. But more and more, I'm getting nervous for them because it's starting to feel very clear that I don't think Sinjin wants to be a part of this relationship anymore. And then to talk about real quick before we move on, next week, we're going to see Tanya and Sinjin have an argument in front of his parents, which is going to get awkward.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay. For as much as they were able to get through with the parents last week and really try to understand each other, it looks like it's going to get kind of crazy going forward.
Yeah. And then I want to hammer out one other couple right away because they're going to be a short one as well. And it's Paul and Karini. The biggest and most important thing here is that we get Paul running again, which is iconic. So I'm happy that I'm going to make that a GIF and I'm going to use it. Watch out for my Twitter, @Puyism. It's going to happen for sure. And then Paul's mom shows up and is going to be visiting. But Karini's been in the bathroom for like hours and now has left the little home and doesn't want to talk to anyone. Goes up to his mom and immediately says, "It's not you that I'm mad at. I promise. It's fine. I just don't want to talk." Walks away. Despite everything they try to bring her back, she's not having any of it. This has kind of been their story for 3 episodes in a row with very little content and just a lot of the "I'm not here for this anymore. I'm out." So I think that personally, I think Karini's checked out. I think she wants nothing to do with this living situation. I think it's a combination of culture shock, homesickness, and a lack of promises fulfilled that she was promised that gives her no reason to want to stay there. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head with this one. I think that, one, it's definitely a culture shock. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that maybe she thought moving to America, it was going to be like big city or, you know, all this other stuff could have come into play. And really, she's now living in what, a trailer park in like,
yeah, pretty
in
much
the middle of nowhere. Like, I couldn't imagine the situation she's in. She's like, I feel better being at home if this is going to be the situation. I totally empathize with her on that one, because that one, that's where I feel like I would draw the line too. And then on top of things, you know, the situation with him is not great. The fact that this guy just will not get his act together. Like, dude, just go get a job. Like, I know it's not the easiest thing in the world, but it's possible. You can go somewhere and get a job. And
he's networking, Bobby.
No, I get what you're saying. I get it. He's networking. It drives me up a wall. Dude, you have a kid. Like, you have to make something happen. He has no drive. He has no willpower to do anything the way it's supposed to be done. It's like, it reminds me of like these people that all they want to do is sit at home and play video games all day. And I'm not saying that's what he's doing, but like, it's like, no, sometimes unless you're like a Twitch streamer, you got to get off the couch and you got to put the controller down and provide and go do something. Like, it's not going to be, it might, you know, be fun now, but it's not going to be fun forever because the money's going to dry up. And I really appreciate his mom, who early in the season said that she's not going to, you know, bail him out on this one. I don't think she should, because I think that's just, you know, putting fuel to the fire of him not wanting to be proactive. And I think he needs this. And everything about this situation, the fact that she goes and runs and won't even talk to the camera or do anything, she's just wanting to be by herself. You're really right when you say they're dragging this out. They're trying to get content out of this because I think the relationship was done a while ago. And I think that they're just trying to find bits and pieces to throw in because this was a mistake. They shouldn't even be on here.
Yeah, at some point, because I know you're not indulging in any of the spoilers, I have seen some stuff about them pop up onto my timeline.
My girlfriend broke that news to me. She just couldn't contain herself.
Yeah, they're in a very messy situation right now. So I do think that this is pretty much done. And I think their way of wrapping it up is kind of giving us little bits and pieces until it eventually wraps up on the show, I think.
Yeah.
I think ultimately, when your mom calls you a deadbeat, like, it's the writing's on the wall. Like, it's done. So yeah. He is just not going to be putting any efforts forward. I think he took his foot off the gas once he got her to from Brazil to the States, because for the last couple of seasons that they were on, he was definitely, for every hate I had for him, he was definitely looking like he was trying more. Whereas I don't see that here. He's gotten complacent, and he is going to probably be regretting that in the near future. But what I'm not going to regret, Bobby, is giving you the next pick here on what you want to talk about.
Oh, man, the pressure is on. Okay, let's get this one out of the way, because I'm sorry. She bugs the heck out of me, and I can't deal with it. And it might be not be the person you fully expect, but let's talk about Larissa and Eric. Eric E.
That's right. So, okay, so we'll make it a double feature. We'll talk about Larissa first, then Colty. But tell me about Larissa and Eric E, and why does Larissa bug you?
Everything about her, like just some of the stuff she says, where I get it. The stuff that Eric said about you and, you know, to those other women, it shouldn't be said. It's awful. But he put a great point to it when he was talking to her. He's like, you shouldn't be going and looking for that stuff. You shouldn't be going and trying to have that fight because it's unnecessary. I'm with you now. Like, obviously, I regret the things I said in the past. Why would you go and try to find a fight and find a dramatic, you know, toxic situation to bring to light? And she does it for the drama. I know she does. She seems like a drama queen to me, where she's just trying to find things to get attention on her. Like, even the way, like, she was sitting with her hand underneath her chin, just, oh, here's my good angle. Take a look at me. Like, it seemed staged. Like, it just seemed fake. It seemed like unnecessary. So I don't think what he said was right at all. I don't think anyone should talk badly to anyone in that way, but I side with him in the fact that this is ridiculous. This is a ridiculous fight that she started. They're in a relationship now, and they need to make these things work. And the fact that she, another thing you asked me why I have disdain for her is the fact that she left her kids, and yet, like, all she cares about is staying in America. And it really frustrates me. There's so many other things. I can't with Larissa.
Yeah, it's just this whole like, here's the thing. It's like when there's two garbage bags this arguing, which garbage bag is right? They're both horrible people. Okay, and I don't want to take away from that. I do think that Eric E is a little bit more of an unknown garbage to me, where I think there's more, like, there's more negative to him than we're even seeing, is my personal thought. And I think that while I do understand that his thing of, like, well, it was in the past, like, it's kind of like, I'm in home base, like, you can't tag me now because I got to base. Like, it's kind of that argument, which I don't appreciate, because I think that there should be an apology for, I'm sorry I badmouthed you. I'm sorry I trashed you to people that you don't even know. I'm sorry that I put, because you're a public figure and I'm a public figure now because of the show. I shouldn't have done that. Like, something of, like, show remorse at least.
Yeah.
But to not show remorse and then to just cite, like, it's in the past, so you goofed by doing this. That part I don't like. But then also, obviously, going through a significant other's phone and then, like, calling people up, like, that's also its own, like, red flag. And then I do think the argument of, well, it's my phone, isn't really a thing. If you gave the phone away, you gave the phone away. So that's that's a thing. But again, that doesn't take away from the fact that I dislike both of them, to be honest. It's just such a toxic relationship. I'm so mad that they made up, because I wanted them to separate, because they both need to not be together. And they're still together. So that's the thing that happens. The other big storyline in this episode for Larissa is that she talked to her lawyer, Adam, and everything is good. She got everything sorted. The case is closed. And now she no longer has any attachment to Colty and Debbie, which she did through this process. So the good news is that's sorted. But the bad news is she's still going to be living with Eric E. And he's made the promise that no cops are going to get involved or of any sort. So that's good for them, I guess. But this is just a very infuriating couple to watch, because they're both awful. They're both wrong. And they're both not good for each other. And yet they're together. So, you know what? Do what you got to do. It's fine.
But Puya, she loves him more than the sun.
Yeah. No, and she, what was the thing you said at the start of this podcast? About?
Are the police going to come? The police will not be called. Oh, well, the police should come because you stole my heart.
Yeah. The cringe factors couldn't have been higher. I couldn't tell if this was more cringe or when Asuelu and his mom met for the first time last week. Let's talk about Colt and Jess / Colt and Debbie, to be honest, because that's what really the situation is. So Colt we get into the show and Colt is telling his story of, so it was about 2-3 in the morning and Jess came in with a man. It was hotel security. So he went ahead and got himself another room. Because like Colt's just rolling in money, apparently. Homeboy has 3 hotel rooms booked.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I was like, okay, do your thing, Colt. I don't know how, but you know, do what you got to do. So then he comes back into the room in the morning to try and like make up with Jess, and he gets to what I like to call villain Colt, where he gets a little mean and like all like confrontational all of a sudden, like. Oh, well, you know, she's just a friend. If I wanted to be with her, I'd be with her. But I'm with you. I came to Brazil to be with you. Blah, 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 blah. So definitely he kind of turned the heat on her a little bit, put the pressure on her. And she said, well, listen, I was bluffing. I was just trying to make you jealous. I wasn't going to sleep with my ex. That wasn't a thing. And then he's like, oh, well, like I was going to propose to you. I asked your dad and everything. And then he's like, what do you want? Like he's trying to, his whole thing was, I need to know when we leave, if me and Jess still have something. But then he went into that room being like, give me your answers, like so angry and guttural. I was like, Colt, you do not have the soapbox to stand on with this kind of statement. You really aren't like supposed to be in that position at all. And then tell me what your thoughts were on that, because I really want to talk about the cab after.
Coming together and trying to make things work. I don't know. Part of it just seemed weird. How do you get that upset and then just calm down completely like that? And it's like, okay, we can go back to normal. Like that whole conversation just really was weird to me. I didn't understand it. It's not like things, you were throwing your shoes at him saying that you're going to go sleep with your ex. Like, how are you all of a sudden like, oh no, it's okay. Like I still love you and all this stuff. I get that they have their issues, but their relationship is very strange to me. And the fact that Colt said, you know, if I wanted to be with Vanessa, I could be with Vanessa. And I'm just like, does this guy just think he could get with any girl in the world that he wants? Like, I'm just saying, like, maybe it's true. Maybe they did have something or do have something, you know, more, but like this guy is just so confident to me, and hats off to him. We can move on, because this whole situation was very strange. The way that he talks sometimes too, he kind of does like almost like a baby voice too, or like you know, like I am, when he's like, oh, my fool, like it's just, the whole thing is just weird. I don't get it.
Yeah, he completely rubs me the wrong way with some of his behavior. But then, so where they get in the cab, because like, of course, they have to make their way to the airport and she's coming with them. And when they go downstairs and Debbie's there, he explains like, so Debbie doesn't know about like the bigger fight. She doesn't know about that whole shebang. But then she's kind of like, oh, she's here. Okay. And then they're sitting down in the cab on the way to the airport. And it's silent for like all of 3 seconds. And then Debbie's like, okay, we need to talk about last night. And she just like dives into it and like says that you hurt Colt and you were mean, blah, blah, blah. And like just going in on Jess. Meanwhile, Jess and Colt are adults and they've already talked their stuff through. Debbie, why are you here? What are you doing? And might I just point out that again, Detective Debbie is on the prowl to get Colt single, to take out Colt's love interest, and she tries everything she can. And my favorite moment of Debbie this entire episode was when Colt walks away to say goodbye to Jess, and all you hear Debbie says, don't propose, don't propose, don't propose.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good, because I honestly did think he was going to propose. The whole thing just felt like a proposal. Yeah, no, but Debbie is just such TV gold, in my opinion. She's absolutely out there with the way she babies her son and the way that Colt allows it, being a grown man in his 30s. Like, it's just so frustrating to me. I'm like, dude, grow a pair, like do stuff on your own. You don't need to take your mom everywhere. You don't need to ask her opinion on everything. Like man up and do what you want. And I do agree with Jess and the fact that Colt did lie. Like Colt lied about the situation. So she has the right to be upset about it. It's not like he did anything absolutely terrible, but a lie is a lie. Like you shouldn't do that.
Bobby, it sounded like had he just been honest and said, yeah, like she takes care of the cats and she's friends with my mom, mm-hmm. but I don't really communicate with her or like, that's the extent of our relationship. That's fine. By you lying and saying you do not talk and then that's found out, it doesn't matter how big or small, that's a lie. You straight up lie. So absolutely. She has every right to be angry about that, in my opinion, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so beyond all that, when they were there and Debbie just kept saying, don't propose, don't propose, don't propose, I was just dying. I was dying on the inside because I was just like, oh, he's going to do it. And he's going to do it right in front of Debbie, too, which is just going to be just going to have her see red. She's going to be so pissed off about this. And no, it turns out they just say weird, like baby, like I love yous to each other. And he tells her how he wants her to come to Vegas and meet his cats. Like, no offense to, you know, people who love cats, but that was just like, what? Like,
don't speak ill of the cats.
I'm not speaking ill of cats. The cats have nothing to do with this or people that love cats in general. But right,
but I agree with you that, you know, I'm excited for you to come see where I grew up or where I live or come see me. Like, there's a plenty of things to say before you say cat. So.
Exactly. Like, did you say that to Liana? Like, I can't wait to move in with you so you can meet my cats.
I'm very excited to move in with the cats. Like, I left her out of that sentence. that was my genuine feeling. As you heard, like I fed a cat during this podcast because I love the cats.
No. Yeah, the cat's the most important part.
Yeah, it's a weird choice of words, but I'm very excited for when, because it has to happen. There is no way we're going to go through this season without Jess and Vanessa meeting. That's happening. Oh, yeah. It's got to happen. So I'm excited for that. And I do not see/think anything else really came out of this conversation and this interaction. The last thing we heard was Debbie thinks that she isn't the right person for him. And to Debbie, I say, we knew you were going to say that. You're going to say it about the next one and the next one and the next one. That's not going to change anything. But what will change, depending on what you say, Bobby, is which direction we're going to go next. So do you want to go to Africa or do you want to go to Europe? Where are we going next?
You know, let's go to Europe because
okay. Save the big for last. I get
yeah, you. Save the big one for last. We did that in the last show. Let's do it again. But let's talk about Libby and Andre. And basically, we can include in Libby and Andre, Chuck and Charlie as well. It's basically become the mm-hmm. family relationship at this point. I know how much you have disdain for Andre, and I know a lot of people do. Andre,
all of them though, because I have a feeling, Bobby. I know which direction you're going to come in from.
Yes,
and I feel like we're going to have very similar thoughts. But go
oh,
ahead.
Really? Okay. Yeah, so I just think that he's not really in the wrong here. Like I would get upset too in that situation. I think that. The fact that Charlie and especially Charlie, but Chuck too, like they've really never fully accepted this guy. They've always been on the, oh, he's probably just doing this for a green card bandwagon and like never fully like welcomed him. And I think that when they're in his country and they're talking to his friends, trying to like almost like seems like they're trying to dig up trouble. Like they're trying to find a reason to convince Libby to like get out of this or something. Like it just, it feels like a situation where they're trying their best to prove that they're right for not liking this guy. And I don't think what Andre did was right. Like, I don't think that that's the way to handle this situation because mm-hmm. it should never come down to them. And it was a big, like, you know, I'm more of a man than you are. No, I am. Like, and I would have loved to see Charlie try to go outside and fight Andre because I think Andre would have just destroyed him. But I don't know. This whole situation, it's really sad. Like, I really feel bad for Libby. I feel bad for the baby. I think that Chuck and Charlie are on their high horse all the time, and it bugs me. Like, they give me that, oh, we're better than you. We're rich and we're better than you vibe. Like, everything about them is just gross to me. So I don't know. What's your opinion on it?
Now, this entire family is gross, top to mm-hmm. bottom, the Moldovan side, the American side, all of them, honestly. Like, I genuinely think that this is the worst I've seen Andre be, the most insufferable he's been. But then also, Chuck and Charlie are not doing themselves any favors either. This entire episode surrounding all this was too much to bear. I do think that it's very obvious. I will give Andre one shred of credit. It's very obvious that Andre has come in and realized that he messed up the night before. Mm-hmm. He definitely regrets it. He definitely wants to make amends. The one thing is, when he was asked to apologize, he said, I'll apologize to them. Maybe I'll apologize to them. He still doesn't want to, like, give in and be like, no, I'm going to do it. But then he wants to talk to Charlie, but it has to be initiated by Libby. Because, of course, Libby is like some kind of, like, agent or secretary that has to set the meeting for him. I didn't like when we go into the Charlie Chuck place and they're like, oh, this Airbnb is so much nicer than Andre's neck of the woods. Like, that's like an unnecessary jab. I do think they're very elitist. I agree with you there. Liana's called them the Karens, and honestly, it's starting to look more and more that way to me as well. They've definitely, I have in my notes, he's been more dickish here than before, because that is how it has been. That is how it's coming off. And Charlie thinks he's, like, you know, good. He's not good. Like Liana said, they both have criminal records. So, like, mm-hmm. get out of here with your righteousness. I don't appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And Andre did go in for the handshake and they rejected him. I did not like that.
The fist bump.
Completely nothing. They gave him zero, shoulder tap, nothing. Not even the social distancing high five.
Amongst COVID, that he was going for the right thing. He was, you know, social distancing before it was popular.
And like this, I have in my notes, the last line I wrote is, God, this is a clown car family. And that's how I feel. Top to bottom. Like, I do feel bad for Libby at points, and obviously the baby for sure. But then everything else about this family, I'm like, you guys are creating this yourselves. There's a reason why they keep putting them on our screen. They had the most screen time this episode. And I think I care about them the least out of everyone on the Happily Ever After season. So they're doing something right for the show to be like, give me more of them. But mm-hmm. I'm just done with them. We're going to get some of the family showing up next week. That's going to add more drama. But I think at the end of the day for me, I think Charlie upsets me more than anyone in that family, because I'm like, who? Like, why are you here? No, this is not your relationship. You're not the father of the bride. You're not the father-in-law. You're literally the disappointing son. So why don't you go back to your basement and, like, stay there? But everyone else, like, they're at least part of the story, and they should be puffing their chests out and talking. You shouldn't. I think at the end of the day for me, everyone knows, because I can't hide it. I really can't with them. This is probably the most frustrating couple to keep an eye on.
Yeah, no, and I get that. They're very frustrating. And let me just point this out. I would pay money to watch Chuck and Charlie spend one night out with St. John's buddies. Like, how amazing would that be? They are polar opposites. Just, you know, one likes to be very monotone with their words and drink wine at home in their rich, prestigious home that they are staying at in Moldova, that you couldn't get this in Moldova. We did not expect this in Moldova. You would only find this in the Hollywood Hills or in Florida. Like, get out of here. And then you have St. John's buddies who are like, what is your deal with Andre? Like, it would be so great. But yeah, no, I can't stand any of them, and especially Chuck and Charlie. As much as you don't like Andre or some others, I can't stand Chuck and Charlie. They're on the Larissa factor with me. Like, mm-hmm. they're right there. I can't stand them.
Yeah, no, at some point I don't want to ever think of, you know, breaking these couples down and tier listing, because there'd be so many people in the bin. It'd be ridiculous. Like, that tier list would look like nothing. because it would be like a pyramid, but only the base. There'd be no tip of the pyramid. No one would be up there. Maybe Kenny and Armando, but that's it. Yeah, they frustrate me. We'll see what they do next week. We'll see what other antics they come to. But every week I come on here being like, I can't hate them more. And sure enough, they find a way to anger me. But the last couple doesn't do much of a favor to themselves either. Or maybe one half of them doesn't. But we're going to Africa. We're going to talk about Angela and Michael. So here's the situation with Angela and Michael. This was a very, very, very important episode for them to set up their future or lack thereof, potentially. But they have to go to counseling first because they got to be given like the green light for their marriage. And then the theme of this entire episode for Angela and Michael is submissive partner, submissiveness of a partner, submission to a partner, whatever you want to call it. And the fact that in his culture, it is expected that the wife be the more submissive role. Angela, when she hears the word submissive in any context, gets angry. So when it comes up multiple times this episode, Angela gets very angry. And to the point where they're having dinner with his aunt, or they're having drinks or something. They're hanging out with the aunt. And the aunt brings it up, and then she confronts Michael and says, well, look, you can't have it both ways. Every time she's bringing it up, you're not saying anything and you're not saying anything to me. So which one is it? You have to make your decision. Plant your flag again. I'm like, Angela, aren't you the one who just made him compromise about not having a child? Aren't you the one who's making him compromise about literally 99% of things? He can't talk to women. He can't have a different ringtone. He can't have Facebook. He can't have this. And now this is another layer. He's not even like, he's definitely agreed to be the more submissive one in the relationship, but you are making it seem like outside of him signing a dotted line of a contract that says, I am the submissive one and I will never speak of this. You don't trust it because every time anyone brings it up, she's angry. What are your thoughts on this? Because honestly, Bobby, I would pick Larissa far before I pick Angel on my dislike list.
Oh, you know, you're not wrong. Like, Angela is 100% up there. What was the woman's name on before the 90 days that went to Nigeria? I'm totally blanking on her name, but they are the same person. Like, I feel like they somehow switched bodies.
Oh, the one that went to Soldier with Lisa?
Yes, Lisa.
Yeah.
Like, her and Lisa are the same person. Like, they cast a specific type. And it's like, it's mind-boggling to me that they were able to find almost identical people for the same position, almost in the same area. Like, it's just, it's crazy to me. Maybe that's how Lisa got cast, because they were like, we love Angela so much, we have to find another Angela. But beyond all that, I agree with you. She's so frustrating. She doesn't like the word total submission, just submission in general. Like, that should have been the name of the episode, total submission, total submission, total submission. But she's out of her mind when she just leaves the conversation always. She can never just have an adult conversation. You don't have to necessarily agree with someone all the time, especially your partner. God knows, me and my girlfriend Angie, we get into it sometimes and we're both passionate about what we believe, but we at least hear each other out and then compromise or try to resolve a situation. Like, it's so immature to me, and the way she constantly leaves and throws a fit and causes a scene. She is so irritating, and I get it from a TV perspective. She's TV gold. You want someone that's going to, you know, stuff two packs of cigarettes in their brassiere and smoke when they're angry. Like that was the funniest part of this whole episode to me, by the way. I died when I watched that.
The backpack brassiere.
Oh my gosh. That I could have watched that scene for like an hour. Just the whole episode be, what else can she just stick in there? How many packs does she have?
It's kind of like the bag, the Hermione's bag in Harry Potter, where like the bag is just massive and you just put anything in it. But also like Reddit has had a field day with that. I do agree with you. Like, cause like I sometimes with some of these shows, when I'm talking about them, I want to make sure the audience knows that I am not by any means hate watching the show. I love the show. Mm-hmm. The emotions I feel, the anger is there, but also that's what they want us to feel. They want, yeah. if they cast someone who's making me feel emotions, they've won. They've made yes. the right call. Sorry. So, Bobby, what is your thought about them moving forward? What do you think is going to happen here?
I mean, I definitely think they're going to work out because it seems like she'll throw a fit, tell him the wedding's off, because that's her favorite go-to line is the wedding's off. And she'll throw a huge fit. And then a day later, she'll just be like, okay, now what do we have to do today? Go to the marriage registry, like go visit your family. Like, it's like nothing yeah. happened. So I definitely think that they're going to last. I think they're going to get married because I think she wants it too much. She's gone too much deep into this and she loves him and he loves her that I think it's going to work out. But this is such a toxic relationship. It's probably the most toxic relationship in the fact that the way she treats him, he's mm-hmm. such a nice guy. Like I feel for him. He's maybe not be, he's not great TV, but I love him as a person. Like, does he do everything right? No, but does he sometimes stick his foot in his mouth all the time, but I like him and I'm rooting for him because I want him to be happy and I want him to get the things he wants. It just sucks that it has to be with her.
Yeah, no, I do think that for me, I was hopeful about this couple. And like, even if they're like kind of difficult to deal with each other, maybe they'll be in a position where they are going to grow together and everything will be fine. And then the last season they were on, that tell-all, I got turned off completely on Angela. That, like, to the point where, like, if it was at 80, it's at 110 now. So now I'm just worried about Michael. And I'm honestly, like, she's just there to be loud and be, again, I think she's going to be loud again at the reunion. I think she's there to make more 100%. TV. I think she wants to be like the next family Chantel or the next Darcy. I think she wants her own spinoff, and I think she knows what she needs to do to get there. So we'll see. So
yeah.
Okay. And I think, well, oh, look at that. Okay. We're done. In the midst of all the rage, the feelings, the emotions, the pets, we've made it through here. Bobby, thank you so much for coming through this crazy journey with me for the this two episodes.
Hey man, I really appreciate you letting me come on here. I am addicted to this show now. I really, really enjoy it. I hope to go back to some of the couples one day from the before the 90 days because I fell in love with most of those couples, even though some of them aren't together anymore, and pretty much all of them actually. Mm-hmm. But I love this show. I'm in too deep now. I can't pull myself out. It's kind of like Big Brother all over again. Once I got in, I'm in. But yeah, man, I really appreciate it. You do such a great job on here, and I love listening to all the podcasts you do. So thank you again. Hope to be on again and talk some more about this crazy show we love.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate that. So before we go, I want to just do a little bit of some house rules. Housekeeping rules, just to make sure everything's put out there. So if you would like to leave a rating and review of this podcast, please go to www.robhasawebsite.com/90dayfiance. One word, the 90 is the number, so 90dayfiance. That will be much appreciated. It'll help the podcast grow. It'll help more people find it. And you can find me on social media at Puyaism or on twitch.tv/Puyaism as well. And just to put you on some other content that's available on the Rahap Ups Network, well, we're going to talk a little bit about Mole Patrol. It's the hottest show of 2020, The Mole, even though it's an older show. But every week, we've got Josh Wiggler, Jessica Lise, and Brooklyn Zed coming through and recapping the show The Mole from way back when, hosted by Anderson Cooper, of course. And Josh has never watched The Mole, and Jess and Zed have. So it's an interesting dynamic for them where one of them is watching it for the first time and then the other two get to fill in all the gaps and all the questions that Josh may have.
So you can have you ever watched it?
I have not.
I have not either. We might have to do a watch party.
Yeah, I'm collecting all the data and then I'm going to definitely watch it at some point down the line for sure. And of course, being a part of this community is something I'm very grateful for. And if you would like to also be a part of the community, I want to put you on. Show support by joining the RHAP patrons through the patron podcast feed that Rob puts out there with exclusive content. There's a Facebook group. There's a Discord. There's a lot available to the RHAP family, and please join us. You can do that by visiting robiswebsite.com/patron for more information. And on that note, I hope you enjoyed your listen over here today. I hope you've learned a lot. I hope we vented on your behalf and ours. And we'll catch you on the Hot Mess Express next week. But until then, take care and be safe. Adios.